Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And good morning. I'm Phil Vacchio.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show, where we answer your questions about wills, trusts, Medicaid, long-term care. It is a call-in show. You can give us a call at 518-476-5900 if you have any questions. Good morning, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jay Marie. How are you today?
I am good. I'm enjoying this weather.
So apparently, did you know it was a scorcher last week? There were some hot days.
I didn't really know. Well, we're inside most of the day, but
the only real reason I knew is because my wife talks about it. I find it pretty amazing. We're 2026, right? A lot of schools, most schools, still don't have air conditioning in classrooms.
That's right. I know.
To me, that's kind of crazy.
That is crazy. Well, so they're not really, they only have to deal with it for a week or two, right?
Well, yeah, I guess at the end of the year, it depends.
Right.
Yeah, but some schools even closed yesterday for heat advisory purposes, apparently.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Yes.
So not us. We have air-conditioned offices. We didn't have to close, which is nice. But
Well, it would have been nice to close, yeah.
Well, depends how you look at it.
That's right.
So you were talking before with the warm weather and the nice weather. I was saying it's also gala season for a lot of the entities and charitable organizations that we support and participate with. Once the weather gets nice, it's always a good time to have their galas to raise money and support the cause and whatnot.
Yeah, that's right. And we participate in a lot of these. I know you're on the board for a few organizations that are very good.
Yeah, we have two galas coming up this week I'm going to. We have one Thursday for the Saratoga Senior Center that we do a lot of work with.
Yes.
I spend a lot of time there when I can.
Because you're a senior?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I got in. I got the early bird special.
Yeah. What kind of events
455.
Do you attend over there?
We do a lot of speaking engagements. Yeah. Every the fourth Tuesday of each month, I go there for about 4 hours straight and get my speed dating sessions in. They get to come see me for a half hour and ask the attorney type of questions.
Ask a lawyer a question. Yeah. It's
really convenient for the residents, not the residents, the people who go there and they seem to enjoy it. So we do a lot with them,
that's great work that you do because
they all really seem to appreciate it, which is great.
Right. It's a lovely place for the seniors to go, and they have activities and
So much to do at all of the senior centers. They're all great organizations for seniors. That one, though, has an incredible amount to do. They do a good job there.
Well, don't you find our retired clients, they're always busier than they were when they were working?
Oh, it's amazing. Their social life sometimes is far and above whatever my social life is.
Yeah, totally. So I try and make an appointment with them, and their calendar is booked, you know?
it actually makes me happy because I know that that next stage of life I'm going to have things to look forward to and things to do, and that's great.
Right.
So yeah, that one's on Thursday. That's at it's in Ciro's in Saratoga Springs.
Very lovely,
very nice location. So, and then on Saturday we have the gala for the Wesley Elder Community and Nursing Home.
I'm
on the board of directors there. We're doing the gala for them, and anyone who's in the Saratoga area pretty much knows the Wesley.
Oh, they've been
They've been there for a long time.
And in the community forever, right?
They were just featured on TV yesterday.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, they had an event, a gala for the residents.
Oh, I was there.
Yesterday.
I was there, Ben.
Okay, there you go.
I was giving back and serving food and pushing wheelchairs and whatever I could to help out. And let me tell you, the residents absolutely loved it. They had a great band.
Really great.
Some great food.
They had shrimp and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah, they had... it was Bang Bang Shrimp. You know, you ever have Bang Bang Shrimp?
Oh, those are great.
I think it was, I didn't try it. I think it was toned down for people who were eating
probably it. Probably didn't have it as spicy.
Well, that could be quite spicy sometimes. They had the Bang Bang Shrimp. They had some beef Wellington, homemade gelato, sorbet rather. So really nice. The residents loved it. But now we're doing the sponsor version of that is next Saturday. So that should be good too. But it makes me think that a lot of our clients have desires to donate to certain organizations, whether it's during life, while they're still around and they give annually or whenever they can. But as part of their estate plan, a lot of times we're talking about giving back after death from what's left and different ways to do that. Do you see that a lot with your clients?
I do. I see it more with people that don't have children or don't have a lot of close family members. But, you know, you see it all over the place. But in particular with those clients, they really want to, you know, make a lasting impression, you know, with the money that they've saved and give it to some charities that they really cherish.
Yeah, there's different reasons, right? Sometimes it's leaving some kind of legacy behind that you feel that you are giving back and helping grow something that's important to you. Right. And when people think about those donations, it's not always to just actual charities, right? You have the quintessential, St. Jude's or Wounded Warriors, like the bigger national ones.
Right.
But there's also a lot of giving on a local level.
There is. And I've done, some work with clients on something like a little shout out to the Community Foundation for the Greater Capital Region. They, let you make donations and they can establish a fund for whatever cause that you like. And I've had several clients leave money to them in their wills, for example, for a scholarship fund. And it's really creative because you can set up whatever your interests are. And it's a charitable donation and they'll make sure, a lot of scholarship funds, for example, that will continue for many years. And it'll be to a graduating high school senior who is studying whatever is your cause. Engineering or biology or et cetera.
And a lot of times it has some kind of like your name is attached to it in a way.
That's right.
It's a thing that your family can attend the presentation of giving it out each year.
Right.
It's a really nice type of thing, a legacy you can use. So
yeah, if you're going to some high school graduations, I'm sure you've seen it where they at the ceremony, they'll award some of those, and it'll be the family's name for,
Yeah, it's really nice. I had a friend from high school who died tragically in a freak accident type of incident. And we put together a foundation for him that's through the high school we went to, Kellenberg High School on Long Island. And we do a bunch of fundraisers every year and people give back. And he was a big lacrosse player, right? So we give a scholarship to a male and female lacrosse player each year.
Right.
That's going to be going to college to play lacrosse and whatnot. So and the family attends. It's a whole big to do.
Yeah,
it could be really nice.
But it's a really nice thing to continue on your name and your legacy.
Absolutely. So there's different ways, right, that you can give the charity after death. You mentioned one way, right, through your will, right? Everyone should have a will as a very base starting point, and you can give to a will. There's a few issues with giving in a will that I've come across to charitable organizations, and I want to see if you agree. If you give in a will and it's what we call a specific bequest to the charity, so it's a specific dollar amount. Say I leave, $10,000 to...
to a church or something.
Yeah, wherever it is. That's a dollar amount, right? Dollars are dollars. There's no question of what $10,000 is. Right. So it's that making that bequest, the executor's job is to follow your wishes, right? Making that bequest is quite easy. They... sign a check from the estate, $10,000, have someone with authority at the institution sign off on it that they received it, what we call a receipt and release, and that's pretty much it. Where it gets a little more complicated is if we leave a percentage through a will.
That's right.
Talk to me about that. What are the extra requirements when you do that?
So if we're going through probate and we're leaving money to a charity, believe it or not, the state has an interest in that.
Right.
The state attorney general's office oversees charities, and they want to, they're there to make sure that the charity is getting what they're entitled to.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's the public interest, right? So they have to review an accounting of the estate.
Yeah.
So if you left 50% to a charity, but, the executor took 30% commission, which they're not allowed to do.
Right.
But they want to make sure that all that money that should go to charity is going to charity and not to other people.
Yeah, they're basically acting as New York State steps in as the advocate for the charity to make sure they're getting what they're entitled to. But what that does for the estate and the executor is it creates additional expenses and delays, because that process can take a while. You have to get the state to sign off. The state might be busy. That might take a while to look at it. New York State Attorney General's office. Yeah. So that could sometimes, by no means am I saying not to do it that way.
Right.
But it could be a little more cumbersome of a way to leave the charity.
Yeah, it takes longer. It makes your executor have to do a formal accounting, you know, which they have to hire someone to do.
And yeah.
So, you know, takes some time.
I didn't know there was math involved in this.
It's math.
It's always math, it's Ben.
I thought you just give an amount and you're done. I
can't get away from math, Ben.
You do percentages and they're making interest and all that other stuff. It skews everything.
It could.
Yeah, oof. That's right.
Okay.
So there's other ways to do it that sometimes avoids that issue, right? So right. One way is you can name charities or entities as direct beneficiaries of financial accounts.
That's right. And a great thing to do is to do that for your IRA accounts.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the best advice because, you know, IRAs are taxable to the beneficiary. And if you know that, when you receive an IRA, you don't just get it tax-free. You have to pay tax when you take money out of the IRA. So if you are giving something to a charity, why not give them something that would have tax, but the charity will get it tax-free?
Yeah. So let's break that down, right? Yeah, you have an IRA. Let's use the example of, you know, one of my parents pass away and they leave me their IRA, their 401k, whatever type of retirement account we're talking about. Those are accounts that the person who funded them funded it with pre-tax money.
Right.
So the government never got paid their income tax.
Mm-hmm.
The government wants their income tax at some point. They're not going to just let it go forever.
No. And they want it quickly.
Oh, they want it as quickly as possible. So if I inherit an IRA from my mom, let's say she passes away, I can roll it over into what we call an inherited IRA account in my name.
Right.
But if I'm a non-spouse, I have to take that out within 10 years of the date of death.
That's right. And each distribution you take out is subject to tax.
Yeah, so I have to file that as part of my income. So if I'm taking $100,000 a year from that, that's $100,000 on top of whatever my normal income is, which could bring me up into a higher tax bracket and paying taxes on that. And what you said, which is true, charitable organizations don't have to pay income taxes on that. So they're getting money from an IRA, from a 401k, dollar for dollar. And so you usually we're telling clients if they're looking to leave in that way and it's just, you know, not just a $5,000 request, something that's more significant, that's the first place to look. Instead of giving more money to taxes, we're going to give more money to the recipient that's a charity.
Yeah, and then you're going to leave your son or, you know, assets that won't be taxed when they receive it.
Yeah.
So if you can pick and choose, you know, the taxable stuff goes to the charity. The non-taxable stuff goes to your children and beneficiaries.
That's a great way to do it. And that also takes away the executor, whoever your person is, their requirement to do the accounting because the institution, the charity is just going to file a claim with the financial institution who's going to send them their 10%, their 20%, whatever you left them. And there's not a question there. We don't have to do a full accounting proceeding to do that.
Right, because if you're not in probate, and if you've attended some of our seminars, there's, you know that IRAs are not part of the probate process. So
hopefully. I have two going on right now where there's no beneficiaries, and that's not a great scenario.
But with good planning, your IRAs are not part of the probate process.
Exactly, that's the key phrase.
They shouldn't be, that's right. So yeah, IRAs are a great tool to leave money to charities. There's other ways to leave money to charities that also avoid probate, which we'll get to in a little bit after the break. And we'll be right
You've
back.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, Saratoga Springs, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Phil, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us in Albany or Saratoga offices, call 518-465-7581 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And I am Phil Vacchio.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show. You can still call in for a question. There's plenty of time. It's 518-476-5900. You know, whether it be about charities, as we're talking about, or any questions that are on your mind, trusts and wills and things like that.
Absolutely. Call on in. So, yeah, we were talking about some charitable giving because I have some galas coming up for organizations that we support and participate with. So maybe think of that and charitable ways to give. Different types of charitable institutions. It could be those national ones. It could be your local library, your alma mater, where you went to college or high school or wherever.
Right.
Really, you can give to almost any entity that you choose to in different ways. But it all depends on how we do it.
That's right.
We want to do it in the easiest way a lot of times, in the most tax efficient way.
Yes, and going through probate, as we said, is a little bit, it takes more time and it's more complicated.
Yep.
So you can avoid probate by using a revocable trust, which is always a great idea to avoid probate. And naming your charity as a beneficiary in your trust avoids some of those requirements.
That's right. And, we mentioned that the tax benefit, too, of leaving it from an IRA is also, and we don't come across it as often anymore, but for the higher net worth clients that have estate tax issues, we can use charitable giving as a way to lower the taxable estate to get them below the threshold sometimes.
Yes.
It's high, right? So New York is about $7.35 million per person. So what that means is when you pass away, if all your combined assets that you're leaving behind don't exceed $7.35 million, you're not paying any taxes.
Right.
And the federal is even higher. The federal is about $15
million. Right.
So not obviously a common problem we come across, but for those that have that issue.
Well, Ben has that issue.
Ben here, obviously.
Stop.
But
I don't have two nickels to rub together. Come on. And we already told our kids that we're not leaving anything. I mean, except for the house and the cars.
That's right.
We're spending it all.
Oh, great. I love that.
That's the way to go.
That's the way we're going to do it.
What's the point of working hard your whole life if you're not going to enjoy it, right?
You don't know how many people are taking care of kids and grandkids right now that are, are my age, 63.
Oh, we see it all the time.
It happens all the time.
You're like, hold on. I thought I got my freedom. What's going on here?
Yeah, that's
so
right.
We told him we're spending it all. Cruises, trips, whatever.
That's
once
right.
we retire, we still cruise now, but
more
after
cruises,
we retire,
absolutely.
And we're going to spend it all. So
I love it. I love it.
That's good.
But for those very few that have estate tax issues, giving to charity is a way. It takes it out of your taxable estate. So
So it satisfies charitable intent and saves taxes. Right.
Correct.
So if you have any inclination to give to charity, certainly do it to reduce your estate taxes as well.
Absolutely. So, Jamer, you brought up a big topic we can get into a little bit. And probably the most, I would say, common way that we do this for individuals is leaving to charity through some form of a trust.
That's right.
And it could be any of the living trusts that we create, revocable, irrevocable. Mm-hmm. I think most commonly, just because of how things are, it happens more often through revocable trusts.
It does. It does because usually individuals who are giving money to charity, in my experience, they're not as concerned as saving money for family.
Yeah. So for a common scenario, for example, an individual or a couple that doesn't have children or individuals they view as, the dependents or heirs that they're trying to, benefit their life. In a situation like that, we often look for other creative ideas of where to, talk to the clients, where do you want to leave it to? Who's important to you? And certainly a lot of times it is still family. It doesn't have to be, if you don't have kids, you can still have nieces and nephews you're very close to, siblings, whatever it is. But a lot of times it also involves some component of charitable giving. And it, not always all to charity. It might be a combination of these family members, but a large portion or some portion to charity as well. And we can accomplish that through the trust.
I mean, the other thing I see with, let's say you're an individual without children and, maybe you have either extensive family or you're not in touch with some of your family, and going through probate would be difficult.
Yeah.
And finding all those heirs. So even if, we have to find all your closest heirs and give them notice when we're going through probate.
Right, because it's not always however they're leaving their assets, it's not always possible to just leave all the assets through beneficiaries, right? For example, they own real estate. Another property, a vacation property in another state, and they want to leave a portion of that to charity or whoever. We're going to have to do some kind of a living trust to accomplish that outside of the probate realm.
Right. I mean, you and I come across the probates every day where, like, I have a client who died who had 9 siblings. 9.
Yeah. Is that weird? Because I have 9. Why are you saying it like that?
It's so bizarre, isn't it? Ben, 9 kids.
Could never imagine
I couldn't imagine that.
No.
It's funny, growing up, like, you know, I was in it, right? So I'm one of 9 kids and didn't think anything of it at all. It was my
just
life.
Normal and, to you, right?
And now I'll be somewhere and I'll be like, that family has like 6 kids. They're weird. Like, hold on. I was the weird family. What's going on? I didn't look at it differently now.
Well, right. So think of it. In this family, between, you know, well, she was obviously older than you. So I think 8 of her siblings had died. So nieces and nephews, and the nieces and nephews had died. And we're down to grandnieces and nephews. You know, I think it came out to 30 people. We had to give notice to.
Oh, my gosh.
And locate, right?
Yeah. So if you go through probate or you have a will, and the situation that Jane Marie is explaining, your closest living family members are more extended because, you know, if you're married, it's your spouse first.
Right.
But when the second spouse dies, you know, first spouse dies, that's easy most of the time. Mm-hmm. Second spouse dies, if there's no kids and no grandkids, then it's parents first. A lot of times you outlive your parents.
Right.
If nature goes as it should. And then beyond that, it's siblings and or children of predeceased siblings.
That's right.
Which is the scenario you're talking about. So there was, you know, a bunch of predeceased siblings, nieces and nephews, 30 people.
Yeah, everyone had big families. I mean.
Right.
Right. In your family, how many nieces and nephews would there be?
So right now we're up to, I think, 13 grandkids, but still lots more
still
to come.
Young, right.
So because there's a lot of young kids still. So it'll be, we'll be up there as well.
Yeah, you'll be there too. That's right.
So yeah, I mean, the law requires, even if I have a will, and my will specifically says it goes to, you know, say just these few siblings, and it goes to these charities. Mm-hmm. And even if it specifically says I've intentionally not included these other members of my class of closest heirs, or, you know, people always say, well, oh, well, I'm just going to leave them each a dollar. Well, that doesn't do anything. That's a myth. It doesn't solve
the
any
problem.
Issue.
We still have to find them.
Right? Because, and the way the court works, where the law works, is this: the law says anyone that would inherit by law, if the will didn't exist, not your class of closest heirs, has to be given notice. They have to receive a copy of the will, and they have to either sign a waiver that says they are not contesting the will and they're consenting to the appointment of the executor. And if they do sign it, that's the smoothest version.
That's right.
But that could take a long time to find everybody. What happens if they don't sign it?
Yeah, if they don't sign it, we have to do something called a citation and serve them with a notice. And they have a chance to show up in court to object.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes they don't sign it because they're not willing to. Sometimes we can't find them.
Yeah.
That's why they don't sign
it. If there's 30 people, what's the chance of everyone having stayed close or knowing where they all are?
So then if we can't find them, that's more complicated. We have to show the court that we made our due diligence. We did all our research to find them. Sometimes we have to publish in the newspaper. You know, it can get very dragged on.
I've had cases where we had to hire like a genealogist, private investigator to go out, because that due diligence to try to find them first is quite a high level depending on what court you're dealing with. But it's not just like, I did a Google search, I looked them up, I tried to call one phone number, sorry, judge, I can't find them. Not that easy.
Yeah.
They really make you jump through a lot of hoops to show that you made every effort to locate these individuals before they'll allow you to do an alternate service like publishing a newspaper or something like that.
Right. And when they're in other states, it's hard to track them down. We've had them in other countries.
Yeah, forget other states, about other countries.
Yeah.
Right?
That's,
you know, it's
right.
And even when you find those people, to get them to sign a document that, you know, needs to be notarized.
We've had many problems doing that.
It's a process.
Depending on where they live. Right.
Like, say I'm in Spain. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they have to go find a U.S. embassy.
Right.
And get a document called an apostille. And it's all these
they're
crazy
not
requirements.
Do that.
Well, why would they want, if they're not getting anything, what's their incentive to cooperate? Like, I'm going to go through all this trouble to not get anything for this person I didn't even really know, right?
Yeah, right. So that's why I will advise, you know, if you're in that situation and you want to give to charity, the easiest, fastest way to do that is with a revocable trust.
And when you do with a revocable trust or even an irrevocable, we talked about earlier with the will, if I leave a percentage, now I have to involve the New York State Attorney General and file a formal accounting. Those same rules exist through a trust?
They do not.
Yeah. So, I mean, Right. So we don't have to involve the state. Now, each entity, the charity, usually has like a giving department.
Yes.
Sometimes there's attorneys in there, not always. But that giving department's job is to make sure they're getting what they're entitled to.
Well, true.
So they may still ask for some kind of accounting, but it's not going to be as vigorous of and formal of a process as going through New York State and having it formal with the courts.
Right. I mean, usually the charity is just very happy to receive something and they're not going to question you too hard. Right.
One thing I talk about giving charities like and listen to them during life, I don't always advise my clients to tell the institutions while they're alive, right? Because if you can, but if you change your mind and you remove them, once you're in like their system,
right?
They have people whose jobs are to get money in for the institution. So they're going to send you a lot of mail. They're going to maybe hound you. So...
Well, some clients do this where they do something called a pledge, right?
Yeah.
I've seen that for schools and churches where they promise to give them a certain amount over their lifetime and or in their will.
Right.
So, you know, the bequest can say, you know, whatever amount of money to fulfill my pledge. You know, maybe I gave a $10,000 pledge and I gave them half of that during my lifetime, right? Then the other half is fulfilled at my death.
Yeah.
Right.
And you mentioned this earlier too, which I like. We can get pretty creative with how you leave the money. So sometimes, a lot of times, we're doing just a general bequest. It'll say, you know, leave it to, you know, St. Jude's Foundation for their general purposes, and you want to list the charity in a very specific way.
Right.
Usually, each charity or entity has like a webpage that you can go to for planned giving, and they'll tell you like the charity's official name, the current address, the federal ID number.
Right.
So you try to get as specific as you can if it's not a well-known institution to make sure it's going to the proper location. But it doesn't always have to just say like for its general purpose or
you
mentioned getting creative.
You can do specific purposes. So you can say, even with the charity you pick, you can pick something that you're interested in that charity.
Yep.
Or you could try and set up your own, you know, thing, you know, with
endowment,
right?
Sponsors, a scholarship foundation, like you mentioned.
That's right. You know, I've seen different things, you know, to a college for the science department to buy laboratory equipment or, you know, like very specific things that you can do.
And I mean, you know, in all honesty, are they definitely going to follow it if you don't like create an actual endowment? We don't know that because there's no one necessarily tracking that and who's going to go out and double check on them and whatnot. But most of the time, they will respect the wishes.
Yeah, they will. And it's a really nice way to leave, you know, as we said in the beginning, a way to leave a legacy, do some good, you know, get some tax benefits if that, you know, is important to you.
Yeah.
So it's something I think everyone should consider in their estate plan. You know, it doesn't have to be huge amounts of money.
No, just something. I mean,
it could be something small.
All those... systems and entities that supported you in some way while you were alive.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice way to give a little bit something back. And it doesn't have to be this huge grand bequest. Every little bit helps with these organizations. It helps them grow. It helps them support the people that they're trying to support. And maybe you were one of those people, right? So send it back, give it back when you pass away one day.
It could be senior centers, you know, local organizations for helping the aged, you know.
Yes.
Or helping
whoever.
Saratoga seniors or et cetera. That's
give,
right?
give back, people.
Wesley, that's right.
All right, have a nice week, everyone.
Have a nice weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you would like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581 or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.